This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to Another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea. I'm joined today by Adrian Martini. Hello, Adrian.
Hello, Sarah.
And you are fresh off of a trip to Pittsburgh. How you doing?
I am.
Yeah.
I'm doing good. I'm tired, though. So from here, it's about a seven-hour drive.
Yeah.
And my dad is from Pittsburgh. That's the Pittsburgh side of the family. So we drove down Thursday.
Oh, nice. You took him with you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. He currently lives across the street, so it makes it a lot easier.
I know. I saw on Instagram. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's Adrian's dad.
Yes.
And then I'm like, but he lives across the street from her. What's he doing in Pittsburgh?
Yes. So he came with me. And that way, too, we can share the driving. Although I wound up driving the whole time anyway, because I don't really mind driving. So as you can attest.
Good. Yeah, I know. Exactly. Boston to Syracuse.
Yes. So he came down with me. Thursday we spent with family, kind of eating everything that wasn't nailed down. Friday was Expo. Saturday was Expo. Sunday was the race. Then Sunday evening we were invited to a dinner because my cousin's on the board of a museum in town. And the museum is a museum of music machines, like music boxes, but giant.
Wow.
Yeah.
Calliopes?
Really, Calliopes.
I love that word.
Yes,
it's you don't a good get to word. Use it very often.
Yes, there was a whole. I can't even begin to tell you. It's it was just a head scratcher. It's not my thing, but watching people who are really excited about something talk about something they're excited by is fun.
Yeah, and music machine. That's a phrase I don't believe I've ever heard.
That is the phrase that they use, because there's really no good way to really describe it otherwise. They're kind of the, like, player pianos would be a music machine, and they had two of those.
Okay.
But also anything that uses, like, the big discs that, you know, those little tiny music boxes with the disc that kind of little plucks the pins that make individual.
I still have my favorite music box from when I was a child. It plays Edelweiss. Yeah.
There you go.
I need to go find that thing because I loved the heck out of that thing.
And it was a big German thing, too. Funny you should mention Edelweiss.
Uh-huh.
And the guy who started the collection is in the house that he built.
Oh, in Russian you call that a dom musée, means house museum.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
There's a lot of them in Russia. Mm-hmm.
The house itself is also a museum. Because he decided to make it as look as much like something from the Black Forest as he possibly could.
Oh my gosh. Sure, Bavaria.
It's very Bavarian. There's lots of woodwork. The dude built a cave under his house, like a cave with stalactites and stalagmites.
And I know the difference between those. Okay.
Wait,
how does one build a stalactite? And you know, I mean,
one uses a lot of concrete, apparently.
Oh, okay, concrete. Okay, so it's not like drip, drip, drip of.
No, that would be cool.
Lime. Uh-huh, yeah.
Take much longer.
This man is 7,000 years old. Yes. He's been working on the cave.
So he was an eclectic guy who collected these music machines, and like the house and the music box. I mean, it's just a whole experience.
A festival of oddities.
It really was, but it was awesome. It was weird and amazing. How's that? I'll put it that way. Okay. It's very much like the House on the Rock in the Midwest, where it's just this very strange collection of things collected by somebody who was a little off-center himself. So, so that was fun. And then we drove back on Monday. And then, of course, all of the things that I usually do in a weekend didn't get done. So I'm just kind of scrambling to try and get back on top of everything. But it was a great race. Had a great time.
Yeah, you posted some fun pictures with Marianne.
Yes. Marianne, Lloyd, and I. And got to hang out with Dimity for a while, which is always nice. And Coach MK and Amanda. And Meredith, who was... gunning for a good race, and I think had one.
Yeah, she did. She PR'd, I want to say, by a minute, 10 seconds?
Wow.
I don't know, something. So, and she is the Chalkley, again, to bring up my best friend. She is making a film, a short film, a promotional film about another mother runner, and so she wanted to follow a mother runner who had done Train Like a Mother plan and then was racing, and so she focused on Meredith, and then for Meredith to have such a great race, I mean, that was... Yeah, awesome.
Icing. Yep. Yeah, icing on the cake. Mm-hmm. So it was a really, it was a good race, and I'll be writing more about it, I think, for a post on Monday. So.
Oh, good. Good.
But I know you had a busy weekend as well.
Yeah, so we were, AMR was bi-coastal this weekend. even though I wasn't on the coast, and Pittsburgh is inland by 6 hours.
It's not coastal.
But kind of. And so I was in Eugene, Oregon, Tracktown, USA. And so for the Eugene Marathon and at that expo, and got to run, I guess I put in about 15 miles while I was down there. I ran on Saturday morning and then ran 10 on Sunday. And the course, it's a fabulous, fabulous race. It's not all that big. It's a great size. It's big enough to keep you going, but not big enough to feel crowded. And so the course is not closed. And a lot of the marathon... the second half of the marathon is along this lovely trail on both sides of the Willamette River. And so I, you know, it's open. So I went running on that same trail, knowing that I was on about from mile 17 to 25 of the course. And but I knew what time the race started. I knew what time I was running. So I knew I'd be ahead of the lead runners. But as I went through, and there were a couple spectators, because the guys, the top runners were coming through before too long, and I would say to all of them jokingly, like, I'm not the lead woman. and then a lot of them would cheer for me anyway, and I'd ham it up. So I love to be a good ham on a run. So
and did they point out you looked awfully fresh?
And maybe a little larger than they expected the lead woman to be. So that was fun. And then Saturday, if the weather holds, I will be at Hippie Chick, which is a local race that I've done many, many times. There's actually a picture of me from 2010. It might have been like the first race expo I ever went to. And when Run Like a Mother came out and selling two shirts and had a... pillowcase that Phoebe had painted. And I was just so proud. That's outdoors. It's a post-race party where the selling goes on, and if it's gonna be like super windy and rainy, so I'm gonna play that one by ear. So very busy. And then the weekend after that is Ogden Marathon, then Happy Girls out in Bend, then Zuma Half Marathon in Annapolis. So I got, I'm a expo gal. Yep.
Yeah, but I know that you've been watching some TV.
I have been watching TV. And oh my gosh. So had to talk middle of the night. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to talk about Victorian Slumhouse on PBS.
I want you to know it's on my DVR.
Okay.
I just haven't quite had a chance to watch it yet.
Okay. So. It is so awesome. It is.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it is just the type of stuff that I eat up and Molly. I mean, like, it's history.
Yes.
It's reenactment. It's people who are passionate about this.
Right.
And these people. So it's in. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I love, like, all the other ones they've done, like Manor House, and they did one in Texas, and, you know, I mean, like, I love these things, so.
Oh, my gosh, and Pioneer House, and,
yes,
I mean,
that must be the one in Texas, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that the fam. Oh, my gosh, that one family was from Malibu, California,
right?
You know, which is, like, so sheeshy, and so then they totally went out and, like brought in a mattress to the, this was in Pioneer House, and I was, like, busted!
Well, and the fact that they wouldn't give up their makeup, like, that was going to be a deal breaker. Yeah,
that's so funny, because one of the women, this isn't a huge spoiler, but in episode 2 of Victorian Slumhouse, a new brother sister who are quite young, they're Irish, because Victorian Slumhouse is set in London, and so they come on, and she has eyelash extensions. And
oh, wow.
So it's just, and I mean, these people, I mean, in true British TV fashion, there is no glamour. You know, these people, their hair is, I mean, so just disheveled, and they are in these authentic clothes. And oh my gosh. And it is, I mean, it's fascinating and just appalling what people lived through.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
persevered. That was what I was saying to Jack. So they start in 18. It's a I believe there's 5 episodes, and they start in 18 as if it's 1860. They don't really start in 1860. they make the situation. They recreate a slum house. It's not as crowded. There's not as many families as there normally would be. And I think they hopefully deloused before the stuff that they brought in.
Yeah.
I mean. I tweeted that I think I got lice just from watching it.
Right.
I mean, it felt so authentic. So, but each week it's, so the first week was 1860. Now it's in the 1870s. And
oh,
so
okay.
that you can see how things change, that machinery came in and, newspapers and kind of people found their voice and women's suffrage and things like that. So, so now I've totally lost what I was thinking about.
Okay. So you woke up in the middle of the night.
But I just, what amazes me is how into this the people are, and people bring their kids on, and the kids seem totally game. And like one of the families, most of the people's motivation is to feel how and I remember what my point is, and I'll get back to it, that they want to know what it was like for their ancestors.
Right.
And so this one family, it's a grandma, grandpa, mom who doesn't have a spouse, and then the two kids. And then the two kids are like, oh yeah, we came on because granny wanted to do this. I mean, my kids love my mother, but they'd be like, yeah, no, grandma, you go do that yourself.
And, I mean, you're on your own on this one.
These kids have to work, and they have to oh my gosh. And the most shocking thing I have to tell you is they have they show, I can't even understand what word they're saying, but it's basically like the equivalent of, if you can't even afford your own room, that you go to this, you can pay to sleep in this one place, and you can either get the semblance of a bed, or they have a rope that is hung across the room, and people would stand slumped over the rope and sleep.
Oh my gosh.
And they call it like the drunk rope or something like that.
Right.
And it's just like, I mean, I can feel the blood being stopped and pooling under my armpits when I think about laying over this thing. And so, I mean, it is, there are shocking moments. There are like, I reach out and finally John, my son, it's like, Mom, stop grabbing my leg. That's my thing. Like when I'm like, no.
Yes, that's John's hardship is that he keeps getting grabbed.
Right. That's what I'm saying. But I know what I was going to say, which is that you watch this and you just think there's so little joy. There's so little light or quiet or food, even like the basics, but also just any shred of enjoyment in life.
Right.
And so they're like, oh, well, so if they can't do this, then they're going to die. And I'm sort of just like thinking, well, I don't know. Like, life didn't seem really all that worth living back
that
then.
That seems like a reasonable option.
I know. So I've learned something. I always say that when I watch or read dystopian things, I'm like, oh, I'm so not a survivalist. Like, let the nuclear bomb take me out.
Yes.
Because I am not going to propagate the human race.
And, I'm with you. Yeah.
And seemingly, also, I would not have been good if I'd been born earlier, because I would have been like, I'm out. I'm off.
Yeah.
I'm out of here. So anyway, but I will not be able to watch television this evening because I'm once again going out for live entertainment.
Oh, it's crazy.
I am. And we're going to get to our guests in a second, but I'm going to see Amy Mann this evening. Yeah.
Oh.
You're a fan?
I am a huge fan.
Oh, I've seen her
now. I'm a little bitter.
Yeah.
Bitter.
I've seen her before in concert, and she is just fantastic.
Yeah.
I just admire the heck out of her. She has such great stage presence, such a great live singer. And the ticket was a little bit more than I would have liked to pay because I had to buy it on a secondary market. I didn't know when it came out. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't find anybody to go with me. So I'm going to the concert by myself.
And that's good too. That's also big fun. Yeah.
And it's not like you really talk to people during a concert.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So I can do this. I can do this. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Adrienne and I are excited to talk with our guest today. She's food writer and cookbook author Melissa Clark, who is a staff reporter for the New York Times food section, where she writes the popular column A Good Appetite. Melissa has a fabulous new cookbook out called Dinner, Changing the Game. We'll chat food, cooking, and running with Melissa after this quick break. Stay with us. Melissa, welcome to the show, and I'm going to admit at the outset, I'm a massive fan.
Thank you so much.
So when I tweeted you an invite to be a guest on our podcast, it was based solely on your new book. And then I was delighted to find out that you're a mother runner. So
I am.
Yeah. So tell us about your family and your running.
Well, I have been running. My gosh, I've been running for 30 years. Running is entrenched part of my life. It's my me time. It's my therapy, it's me getting out into the world. It's being in touch with my body. I started running when I was 17. And I remember I started running because I wanted to lose weight. That was the initiative. And I remember my friend saying, she's like, just don't think of it as, an exercise or something you have to do. Just think of it as 20 minutes of you being alone, out in the park. It was, I was living on the Upper West Side. So it was in Central Park. And those were the magic words. This was me time. And I fell in love with it. And I've been doing it ever since. I'm not competitive. This is something I do for me. I really like to run by myself. It's about being in my own head and also about being in the park, which is as close to nature as I can get. And I've run through many injuries. I just keep doing it. And I hope to do it for the rest of my life. I look forward to running and I look forward to getting faster too. I've never cared about speed. And now that I'm in my 40s, I'm sort of interested in going a little bit faster than an 11 minute mile. So I'm going to work on that.
Oh, well, a couple things out of that. One, I'm very impressed that at age 17, you wanted to be alone and that you craved me time. I mean, teenagers are self-centered, but I don't know. I don't see it as being I think I'll go, be alone with my thoughts for 20 or 30 minutes. So, you must've been a very mature teenager. And,
I was definitely a weirdo kid. I know. I can't imagine my daughter ever doing that, but you never know.
Right. So, so you want to get faster as you are approaching 50. So what are your plans for that? And I don't want to discourage you, but it's a shame you didn't have that idea 10 years ago or something.
I know. Well, here's what happened. So I was always a runner. I had my daughter. And I had my daughter 8 years ago or 8.5 years ago. And that's when my husband started running. He never ran a day in his life. He was, always poo-pooed the idea. But he and I would run together just a little bit. And then as soon as I had my daughter, he was had this midlife crisis of, oh my God, I'm going to go away for a run now. And I'm not bringing, any technology. So you cannot reach me. And he would always say he would run away from us, but then he would run home. But the thing is, he discovered that he was super fast, just naturally super fast. And he became this crazy marathoner.
Oh.
And he ran Philly in, may I say, he's a master runner because he's in it, in his 40s. He ran Philly in 2:38. It was super random, my husband.
Oh my gosh, we have to hate your husband. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he just did that. I mean, he trained for it. He took it really seriously. He tried. But so since he got into, marathoning and speed, that's when I started getting interested in the idea of, again, like I said, running faster than an 11-minute mile. So he's been teaching me about intervals. So I've been doing, I've been trying to do some fast intervals.
Uh-huh.
And so that's my, and I don't really care about getting that much faster, but it's a nice way to challenge myself. And because it's just me and my my fancy watch. You know, no one has to see. I can delete the ones that don't work.
But so despite all that, you still, though, you were very adamant in an email that you do not race. Do you feel that maybe, because, I mean, if you raced, it would help you get faster because you'd have that impetus to keep up with people catch them up.
Yeah, I know. I do have a fantasy. So there's, you know, every Thanksgiving, there's a turkey trot. Uh-huh. So there's a little, you know, 5K. Uh-huh. So I'm thinking of running that in November. Mm-hmm. And then I have this fantasy, not this May, because I'm getting over an injury right now, but a year from May. So a year from now, I want to run the Brooklyn Half. That's like my big goal. Oh, so I have a year, you know, as soon as I get over this injury, I'll have about a year to train for it. And I mean, I will be 50 then. So a lot of people celebrate 50 with a marathon. And for me, I'll try it with a half marathon if I can do it.
Nice.
Yeah. And I've heard incredible things about the Brooklyn Half too.
It's such a beautiful course. I mean, it feels like home to me because I grew up in Brooklyn and I know the course really well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you end up at the beach,
which is even better.
Yeah.
The beach, Brooklyn. I always think of the beach when I think of Brooklyn, you know?
Coney Island. Yeah, there's some.
Oh, I guess I didn't know that. I guess I didn't know that Coney Island is in Brooklyn.
Yep. Right at the end.
All right.
Yep. Remember that New York is an island, more or less. So.
Oh, I do. Oh, I'm aware of that. And I've certainly, I've run, you know, for a person who has never lived there, I've run in New York a fair bit, and run along the water. But I've been to Coney Island and I don't know. I grew up in Stamford, Connecticut. So I've been in and around the city enough,
right.
But yes. Well, those are all wonderful goals to have. And so your husband's coaching you. Is that your, he's giving you
right now
advice.
that's how it goes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think about, you know, maybe trying to train once I really get serious about training. If I really decide to do this, mm-hmm. this half a marathon, I will find a running partner because I think that, and so that's something that you do, right? I mean, that mm-hmm. the running partner is an important.
Oh yeah. best running friend is your best piece of equipment for sure. Yeah. Well, excellent. Yeah. So, and do you have some people in mind or you're just going to throw the net wide open and start asking coworkers and neighbors and things like that?
I have a few people in mind who I see running as slowly as I do in the park, who I know. But, you know, you have to approach them lightly.
Right.
It's a delicate thing.
Right.
Like, hey, you want to train for a half marathon with me, you know?
Right.
Can't really start with, hey, you look slow.
Right.
Exactly.
Just to kind of change tack here a little bit. So Cooking Changing the Game is your 38th cookbook.
It is.
It seems, that's crazy. It seems to be aimed at busy cooks like many mother runners. What's the motivation behind the book and how did you decide which recipes to include?
Well, you know, I have a column in the New York Times every Wednesday called A Good Appetite. And every single week I get the same kind of feedback from people. You know, they want recipes for easy but interesting dinners that they can mm-hmm. make after work or they can make for their families or for themselves. Every single person who contacts me is busy, you know. And the refrain that I hear over and over again is that dinner is overwhelming. And also, it seems like at about 4 o'clock every day, there's this sort of collective sigh in the world where everyone goes, oh my God, I have to make dinner. What am I going to make for dinner? It's almost as if they've never done it before. Of course, you know, people say, oh my God, dinner. I just did that last night. I have to do that again tonight.
People are still hungry.
Exactly. I said you yesterday, you want more food. But, I can understand because it's the same thing, you know. For me, it's like we're all so crunched for time. And since it is my job and I'm a professional, I think really hard about what makes sense for people to make after work for dinner, but also what's delicious, you know, what's mm-hmm. going to be thrilling to make too, because part of cooking is not just, you know, the nourishment, but it's also, you know, the enjoyment and the love. You mm-hmm. want to cook something delicious to feed the people around you. Mm-hmm. They like you more too if you do that. And
right.
you're happier too because you're feeding your body in a way that feels good on so many levels. You know, emotionally, you're finding joy. You are, you know, enjoying the process. You are eating something delicious. That's a good feeling. And so that was the impetus to write this book, which, I do it for my column once a week, but for this book, what I decided, you know, my column is far ranging. You know, I might do a dessert. I might do a breakfast. Mm-hmm. For this book, I decided I'm just going to focus on dinner, and I'm going to find over 200 recipes. I'm going to create over 200 recipes that people can make on a daily basis that are easy, that don't mess up your kitchen, you know, very few pots and pans, because right. I'm obsessed with quick cleanup. I can't stand, you know, you don't want to spend as long cleaning up as you spend cooking.
Exactly.
And that are also interesting and flavors that people wouldn't necessarily think to put together themselves.
Well, I definitely felt that way. I told you the other day that I was making the quesadillas with the poblanos and the black beans and the smoked mozzarella. And the smoked mozzarella, you know, when I think of mozzarella, you know, I think Italian food, as probably a lot of people do. And so to put it on, you know, largely Mexican dish, I was like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. And oh, it was so tasty. And just
good. Yeah, the smoky thing is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was very good. It was very good. Yeah. So before I go on a run, I sometimes don't feel like going, but when I return, I'm always glad that I did. And I often feel the same way about cooking, that I dread making dinner. Like you talked about that 4 o'clock, oh, got to make dinner again. But yet once I get into it, I'm reminded how much I enjoy the process. And do you think I'm alone in that feeling?
Oh, I think that is the feeling. You know, I think people forget that. You know, especially people forget because we're pulled in so many directions, mm-hmm. and we feel like, oh my gosh, we have to be doing, you know, the same, it's the same exact thing with going for a run. I should be working. I should mm-hmm. be, you know, calling my mother. I should be answering my emails. You know? And you forget, but I think cooking and running, I mean, for me, I embody it because these are the two things. These are my me time. They're my enjoyment. And I claim that running time. I'm like, I am going to run because I need it for me. It's the same thing with cooking, mm-hmm. with the added bonus of it also feeds the other people in my house. Right, but right. cooking, if you just have to get it, you have to remind yourself. I mean, and it's true. It's just a daily reminder. I like this. Remember, this can be therapy. This, mm-hmm. I always say, make your dinner preparation time the best time of your day. You know, mm-hmm. make it either bring the people you love into the kitchen with you so that you can talk to them. You can listen to music together. You can help your kids with their homework. You know, sometimes my husband will read to me. He'll read me the newspaper.
Oh.
Or get everybody out of the kitchen and take the time as your serenity time and like be in your moment with yourself and have a moment of calm before dinner, like whatever works for you. But just give yourself permission to make it about you.
Yeah, I got to say that I'm glad right. to hear you give the opposite of that, because I forget what show I heard you on, but you were talking about how much you enjoy the time with your family when you're cooking. And I'm like, oh, I'm such a mean mom, because all I think is, could you just leave me alone? I just want to listen to this podcast. I just want to listen to NPR for a little while and not pause it 20 times.
And, exactly. Yeah, yes. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We have a really long, narrow kitchen. So if anybody's in there with you, you're just always playing this little dance, trying to get out of each other's way. So I'm very much a, please leave me alone. Just leave me alone.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. You're tonight. Please.
Your kitchen is suited for you. That's good.
Yes.
Yeah, no, we have a big open kitchen, so it's easy for, you know, for all of us to be in there at the same time.
Yeah, and you also have one child, so that there's not that bickering thing that is just so
delightful.
That makes
a big difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a big difference. So, you know, her big thing is she actually would like us to go away so that she can just sit and read and read her book. And, you know, we just insist on talking to her. We're so annoying. But you know, she at age 8 is a burgeoning runner. That little kid is fast. So
nice.
Yeah, she runs circles around me, literally. Awesome. And loves it. So
awesome. Awesome.
So I find that I really get into ruts when it comes to dinner. You know, we have taco night every week just because it requires the least amount of thought and focus on my part.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you encourage people to get into unknown terrain? And do you have any advice for folks who might be on a meal repeat cycle?
I think we're all on a meal repeat cycle. I think that that's the norm. I think that we, you know, getting into these dinner ruts, you know, and they're not necessarily ruts until you're tired of them. I mean, doing dinners right. over and over again, if you're enjoying them, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you feel fatigued by the idea of taco night again, then it's a problem. Right. Or, you know, that thing that you do with the chicken. Oh my God, we're doing that thing. My mom's making that thing with the chicken she always makes again. Mm-hmm. And then that's when, you know, that's when you really do need to turn. You need to get online and look for new recipes. You need to buy my book, for example, but you know, you might as well plug it here. Yeah. But no, I mean, and I think that the key thing is to find reliable sources that you can turn to over and over again. You know,
that's
find the person whose cooking style matches what you want to eat and then stick to that. Like, okay, you know, I mean, so many of my friends say that they don't know what to make for dinner and they'll just Google Melissa Clark chicken garlic and then they'll like, okay, well, here's what the, you know, and then it'll be a bunch of ideas. So I say do that, you know, just find your source, whoever it is, just Google their name with whatever ingredients you have in the fridge.
Right.
Oh my gosh, that's very clever. So an entree is a winner for me when it has a different taste in every bite, and that black bean and roasted poblano quesadillas totally fit the bill for that one, with the roasted chilies, the lime, the smoked mozzarella, like I mentioned. I loved that the onions were a little bit browned. So what goals do you aim for in a recipe?
That's actually a really good way to say it. I do think that every bite should be a little bit different. I think that it gets boring to eat the same, like a meatloaf for me.
Mac and cheese.
It becomes, you know, I can eat three bites and then I'm done because mm-hmm. There's nothing to keep me going. So I'd like to have, I think a big important part of it is to have, you know, the different elements, but also garnishes are so important. And because when you throw different garnishes on, that really helps each part of the dish taste a little different. I'm big on using a lot of fresh herbs, you know, herbs, whole herbs, especially, or torn, you know, not finely chopped. You want them in big textural pieces because you also want to have texture. In addition to flavors, flaky sea salt makes a big difference because you have salt in your recipe. But, you know, if you have like crunchy salt on top, you get this burst of salt flavor. You get this crunch and that keeps it interesting. A little bit of olive oil, a little bit of vinegar or lemon juice. All of these things are super simple. Just throw them on at the end or some chili powder. Mm-hmm. But they make each bite different. They add a lot in terms of the first thing that you taste, you know. If you don't garnish a dish, you taste like the sort of the dish all unto itself. And then the flavors, you know, get a little bit dull. But if you're putting all these fresh things on, then the first thing before you even, like, one of my favorite things to do with mac and cheese is to garnish it with hot sauce or sriracha or lime juice. And then I have that bite and that flavor first before I get to the, you know, the sort of carbohydrate-y cheesiness of the dish. And that really keeps it keeps it alive, you know, and you can do that with anything, any dish you're making. One trick that I say to people is if you have spices in the dish, save some of those spices and then add them as a garnish so that you have the flavor of the combined spices in the dish, you know, like if you're making a curry or something, but then just have some of that curry powder or whatever on the side at the end and then sprinkle it on top. And that makes a huge difference and it doesn't actually take any work.
Right. And it's kind of that upfront that you know, that, oh, okay, it's pleasant right from the get-go and kind of keeps pulling you into it.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So many of your recipes seem to appeal to everybody in the family. So how do you find meals that all family members will eat?
You know, my daughter keeps changing. She's 8 years old. And I wish she would just make up her mind about what she likes and what she doesn't, but it's just constantly changing. So, well, on the one hand, that also means I don't have to, you know, I can keep bringing things back and, you know, maybe she will like them because that has happened. Used to be she wouldn't eat any stewed meats, but now stewed meats are A-okay. And fish, which used to be okay, is now not okay. So I feel like it's a fool's errand to try to please every single person sitting around your table. But if you can please yourself first and then maybe most of the other people, then you're good. We all love salad. So this is a good thing. So I always have a big, huge salad. And then there's usually something on the table. You know, if you know that your kids or your husband or whatever isn't going to eat, you know, the chicken parmesan because they don't want the tomatoes on it or whatever it is. So take part of it out and just leave that on the side or scrape. I'm a sauce scraper. I'll scrape the sauce off something for her. And you know, worst comes to worst, she'll eat the salad and she can have toast. There's always toasted peanut butter that is. And I don't mind, you know, if she eats toasted peanut butter and salad once a week for dinner, I think that's perfectly fine.
Yep.
Let the meat
As
toast.
For my husband, he could always order it. No, I mean, he's, he's good. But we both mostly like the same things. He doesn't eat dairy, so I usually put, if there's something with a cheesy component, I'll put that on the side for myself.
So for me, it's often meal planning that wears me down, not so much the cooking, as I've kind of alluded to. And so what advice do you have for someone like me that just the, ugh, gotta, you know, figure out on Monday morning when I go to the grocery store or whenever it is, like how to plot out that week of meals?
Well, first thing I say to people is to always have a stocked pantry full of condiments. And I am a big believer in condiments, because I feel like if you know that you have the basic building blocks for flavor for your meal, you know, you've got your spices, all kinds of interesting spices. You have to have lemons in the fridge, really good olive oil. You need to have vinegars, soy sauce. I have a chapter in my book about building up your pantry. Then it doesn't matter what you get, because you're going to have the tools to make it delicious. So you could go to the store and you could have no idea what you want for dinner. You know, you need vegetables, so you buy whatever it is. And you know, okay, maybe you want a protein, so you can pick up something, and you don't have to know how to combine them. I think that you can do when you get home, as long as you have the flavor palette from which to work. And I mean, it's always a good idea to have, you know, you should have pasta, because if worse comes to worse, then you can, you know that you can always, I always say, if you have pasta and you have like a big head of leafy green vegetables, you're good.
Right.
You've got, you know, because you're going to have garlic, you're going to have onions, probably have olive oil, maybe Parmesan. You know, you have enough stuff to in the pantry to make a delicious, you know, one of my favorite, I don't know what to make for dinner, is pasta with anchovies and kale. And I use a ton of kale with it, and a lot of anchovies, some chili flakes, some garlic. It's got a lot of flavor. It's super easy. And because I'm using so much of the green vegetable, it's like, it has a lot of, nutritive value, aside from, you know, the satisfying pasta flavor.
And will your 8-year-old daughter eat that? I mean, my kids.
Yeah, she will.
Wow.
She will. You know what? She doesn't eat the kale part.
It's not the kale. It's the anchovies that are big.
Yeah, don't tell them. Don't tell them.
Don't have her listen to the show.
If they've listened to the show, tell them you didn't put the anchovies in this time, because they melt, you know, they melt into the sauce. They completely dissolve. You know, put a couple, don't put that many. When using anchovies, I always say, you know, start out slow, add just a couple for complexity. You know, you're not, it's not like about it tasting like anchovies so much as anchovies sort of reinforcing the flavor of everything else. It's that umami thing.
See, I'm like, yeah, I could tell, like Melissa's selling me on this, but then I'm like, oh, but I'm the one doing it, so I'm going to know they're in there. Like if I could have like an assistant come in and chop them up while I'm like, you know, while I'm looking down switching podcasts or something, right. You know?
Right. Maybe have Alex move in.
Right.
And he
right.
can be the anchovy guy. Yeah.
Okay. Well, skip the, then if you, I mean, if you're not an anchovy person, skip the anchovies, use extra garlic and some, do you like Parmesan? A little Parmesan.
Yeah. Gosh,
like,
I love Parmesan.
Yeah. So it's the same. It's the same principle.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Good.
So I think that I'm a pretty good cook. I've been told that I'm a pretty good cook, and I'm not tooting, you know, singing my own praises here, but I can get it done. The problem is everybody says that they have this go-to roast chicken in their pocket. Like every good cook should be able to roast a chicken. I cannot roast a chicken to save my life.
Oh, that's funny.
It's the weirdest thing ever. It's either I can't get it cooked all the way through, or I have cooked it so far because I'm concerned about getting it cooked all the way through that I have now made a chickeny brick. So what are your hints and tips for chicken roasting?
Okay, well, chicken, I do believe that roasting a chicken is one of those things that once you figure it out, it's just, you won't have to worry about it again, because you'll realize like, oh, okay, I got it. Some of my tricks are use a smaller bird if you can find it.
Right.
I think it's harder. A lot of the chickens that we get these days are 5 pounds. And that's
I know,
big.
It's crazy.
And yeah, it's really, I mean, that's a lot of chicken, which is great if you have a big family, but it also, I think they're trickier to cook. So if you can find a smaller bird, it will cook more evenly. I have a recipe in my book for simplest roast chicken. It's just salt and pepper. And I season it ahead. If you can do that, if you could just put even just salt and pepper on your chicken ahead. And then the trick is put it in your fridge uncovered. Mm. And that way it allows the skin to dry out a little bit. And the drier your chicken skin is when it goes to the oven, the crispier it will become. which is really great. So you get that like crispy, salty chicken skin, which I think is the best part. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing. And then if you do have a big bird, it's worthwhile learning how to spatchcock it. And spatchcocking sounds like, oh my God, what is that? But it's basically cutting your chicken along the backbone. You just use a pair of kitchen shears. It's really easy. You just cut it along the backbone and you basically open your chicken like a book. And you have this
not a sentence you hear every day. Okay.
Open your chicken like a book. And you know, it sounds really weird on a podcast, but you should just Google how to spatchcock a chicken. There'll be a little video that'll pop up.
And it'll probably be you. Uh-huh. Yeah. Doing it.
There are a lot of people who've done it. So, and it's super. And then what's so great about it is that, when your chicken, instead of having this cavity, you know, when your chicken, normally you have the cavity inside the chicken, and then it's hard to cook evenly because that air inside the cavity sort of insulates the bird, right? Mm-hmm. But if you open it up and you're pressing it, the entire bird on your pan, you get a lot better air circulation. Mm-hmm. You get a bird that cooks more evenly. So you don't have to worry about, you know, like, oh, the thighs aren't done, but wait, the breast is too much done. Right, and the thighs are kind of pink in the middle. And you won't get that because it'll cook evenly. So, and it cooks faster, which is the best part. So instead of it taking an hour or an hour and 15 minutes for your chicken to cook through, it'll cook in, you know, for a small bird, it'll cook in 35 to 45 minutes. And a bigger bird, it'll cook in maybe 40 minutes to 55 minutes. So it's fast, it cooks it better. It's really, that is one skill I say, learn how to do that and you're going to be in so much better shape. And then making a chicken will just be like, oh yeah, no problem. I got this.
Okay. I'm going to spatchcock the heck out of that thing and we are good.
Yeah, exactly. And tell everybody they're eating a spatchcock chicken and everyone will be like, ooh, what's that?
Yes. How long does it take before you stop giggling every time you say spatchcock?
I know, right? If you want, you could call it a butterfly chicken. That's another way to say it.
Oh, that's not nearly as fun.
It's so much more fun to say spatchcock, right?
Oh my goodness. So I think the New York Times cooking app is one of the greatest mobile phone apps ever created.
Yay.
From its functionality, it's on my homepage on my iPhone. So from the functionality to the community aspect of the comments, it's just sheer genius. So for the uninitiated, tell us about NYT Cooking.
NYT Cooking, I agree with you 100%. I think it's really good. Mm-hmm. It's an app that we created, and it's basically a portal into the New York Times, all of the New York Times cooking content. And what's great about it is that it's really easy to search. You can search the recipes pretty easily. And it's just got it. You can use it on your phone. You can use it on your computer. And what's great about it is, aside from, I think the searching is amazing, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. you can really, you know, narrow down, like I was saying, like, what do you have in the fridge and what do you feel like making for dinner? You can put in, you know, chicken, broccoli under 15 minutes and you'll get a recipe. Mm-hmm. But another thing that's so great about it is that at the bottom of each recipe, we have a place where people can write notes. And mm-hmm. we actually specifically call them notes instead of comments, because mm-hmm. we want people to write their cooking notes into the recipe. You know, and that way everybody can read them. And you can see, it's so fun to see how people vary the recipes. You know, like I write a recipe for, you know, chicken with caramelized lemons. And people will say, well, okay, this is great, except I made it with duck and I made it with cranberries. And it's just, it's amazing. And it gives, or people will have questions and they'll answer each other's questions.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Yeah. I love it when that happens.
Which is so helpful, because you'll be in the middle of a recipe and you'll not understand something. And then you look through the notes and somebody else in the world also didn't understand the same thing. And then a third person came in and answered it. So I find it really helpful. I think it's very easy to use, which is key. Mm-hmm. And the photography is beautiful. So do think that people should, you know, load it up on your phone or go find it. It's NYT Cooking.
Yep. Yep. And also the notes, maybe it's just some setting I have on my phone, but when I click on notes, it shows up as most helpful, I think is what it's called, first.
Yes,
like
exactly.
Not just the all ones, you know, because all would seem like the default one and it's most helpful. And so then sometimes that's enough. And then I'm like, no, I need to see more. And yeah. And then also the being able to organize it. I love that, so that, you know, I can save it as Asian or chicken or vegetarian or whatever. And then, not to disrespect the New York Times, but you can also then save outside recipes, so that
the third party save is so helpful for people, because then you're like, oh, I like this recipe,
Yep.
I like Mark Bittman's, you know, quiche, but mm-hmm. you know what? So-and-so on Epicurious has a really good quiche too. Yep. I want to put it next to it and it's all right there. You can have a little recipe box.
Oh, I know. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, you were saying like find your favorite, you know, person or persons, you know, and then, or sources, and then use those go to over and over. And so then, you know, okay, so NYT Cooking's definitely the top of the list for me, but there are a couple other sites that I like. And so then I can also save them in NYT Cooking. So it becomes like this, you know, big group food hug that just hooks me up. So thank you. And also, you know, that there's articles on there. I mean, I just like it. Sometimes I just read it to read it, not even when I'm looking right. for a recipe.
Yeah, so. Because it's the whole food section. So mm-hmm. it's all the food content
mm-hmm.
aside mm-hmm. from the recipes.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. So.
So your new book is about dinner. But do you have a go-to meal or drink for after a run?
Oh, okay. Yes. So, I love to do a smoothie. I like to say I've been doing smoothies before they became cool, but you know, it was just always one of those things, you know, since I've been running for so long and you know how after a run, you're starving and you're thirsty. And so my favorite thing I love to do a yogurt based smoothie because I want the protein and, I make my own yogurt. So I always have a ton of yogurt and I also have a lot of whey. If anybody out there happens to have whey from, you know, yogurt, if you make yogurt, sometimes I make Greek yogurt. So I drain my regular yogurt and I get this whey
right.
and that becomes the basis for my smoothie. And you know, and then after that I keep it. So that's the protein. And then I keep it simple. I just load it up with fruit and then that's it. I don't have, because I'm using yogurt, I don't need to add protein powder. I don't really like powdered things anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then a ton of ice, you know, just mm-hmm. a lot of ice because I want it cold. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Maybe a drop of honey if my fruit isn't super sweet, or to balance out the yogurt if it comes out a little sour. And I just change it seasonally. I don't sneak anything weird in there. I don't. Sometimes I'll put ginger, fresh ginger root if I feel like I'm coming down with a cold.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, I keep it really simple. And and then it's just so yummy.
Huh. So and the way I've seen is actually Adrian, from up near where you are, further north, my brother went to St. Lawrence and they sell like whey at like convenience stores up there.
Oh,
but
yeah.
they were curds. So the whey that you get from making your own yogurt is not like a almost like a hard cheese or a.
No, it's kind of a watery.
Oh, okay.
I can't quite describe it. You know, when you get the big thing of yogurt and if you stir it kind of and let it settle, there'll be kind of like a watery substance that comes to the top.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the way.
Oh, all right. Because otherwise I would think it's like putting little cheese clumps in your smoothie. So that doesn't sound real appealing. So
oh, I don't know.
No, that's the curd part. Oh, yeah, yeah. So you have your curds in your whey. So the chunks are the curds and then the liquidy stuff is the whey.
Oh, all right.
That's the whey.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Although I, you know, if you had a nice ricotta, that would be good in a smoothie, I think.
That would actually, and it's another thing is if you ever have made your own ricotta, that is another place
yes.
where you have tons of whey left over, but ricotta is good. I mean, I like the tang of the yogurt. The ricotta mm-hmm. would make it a little bit thicker, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when my husband was making, went through a big smoothie phase and he's the kind of guy who does like all the weird stuff in his smoothies, like all the antioxidant stuff. And, you know, he has the goji powder and the hemp powder and the, whatever, God, the
chia
golden
seeds.
Flax seed powder
uh-huh.
yeah, and right. the chia seeds. Yeah. Uh-huh. He does all that stuff and he puts vegetables in there too. He'll put kale in there. Not me. It's like, I like to think of it as like, you know, when you get a yogurt, you know, you make a yogurt bowl with fruit and yogurt.
Right.
And some honey. Uh-huh. So that just gets liquefied, like, and ice. And really, really simple.
Nice, nice. So partly on the recommendation of Adrian, I bought my husband an Instant Pot for his birthday, which was in January. But we have yet to christen it. I don't eat beef and we don't eat a lot of other meats. And I'm starting to regret the purchase.
No, no. Oh my God. Did you read my article on Instant Pots? I wrote a whole article on it.
I know you did. And I clicked save on my New York Times app and I have to go back to it. But
have to dive in. Just
beans. Okay. People think beans. Instant Pots are just for meat, but they're amazing for beans.
Uh-huh. All right. So talk me through that.
Okay. So one of my favorite things to do in an Instant Pot is I love hummus. I love chickpeas. Chickpeas are I could eat them at every meal. And do you like chickpeas?
I love chickpeas. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And I really think that they're so much better when you make them from scratch rather than from cans. They just taste better. They're better for you. And what's great about an Instant Pot is you can take the dried, you go to the store, you take the dried chickpeas. You don't have to soak them.
Okay.
You throw them in the pot with, this is important, you do use salt. So don't worry about putting beans and salt together. It's fine. You put your chickpeas in, you add a lot of water, you add salt, and then I throw some, you know, whatever you want to flavor with. I like to throw some whole garlic cloves in there and maybe a celery and a bay leaf. Uh-huh. And then you set it for 50 minutes and that's it. And in 50 minutes, you've got gorgeous chickpeas swimming in this chickpea broth, and the broth is incredible. I use the broth instead of chicken broth when I make soups. It's so tasty. And you can take those chickpeas and, you know, you can just turn them into a dish. You could actually make a whole chickpea soup right in the Instant Pot at the same time if you threw tomatoes in. But what I like to do is so I'll take them out and I'll save them in the fridge, you know, toss them with a little olive oil, and they'll keep for a few days. And then they go into everything. You can make a curry out of them. You can make your own hummus in, you know, 5 minutes after they're cooked. It's such a good – that I would say if you like chickpeas, make that the first thing you do. And you won't – just for chickpeas, it's worth it.
My $200 chickpea maker.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's also – I mean, do you eat pork? I know you don't eat
beef. I do love pork.
It's fantastic for pork. It's so good for pork. It's so good for I mean, I made incredible chicken and dumplings. I don't know if that's something you ever want to do, but it's really good there. And soups, and we do bone broth. We're bone broth people. So it makes like chicken soup or chicken broth or bone broth in a couple of hours. And it is super handy. I'm a big proponent.
Okay. All right. Because since I work from home, like to simmer, you know, a chicken carcass all day long is not... you know, that's doable for me. So then I'm like, oh, do I really need to go downstairs and bring up the Instant Pot and read the directions? And I'm like, no, I'm just going to put it on top of the stove and call it good.
I think once you really get the hang of it, you're going to...
I'm very intimidated by technology.
See, I was intimidated by having a very small bomb on my counter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true, actually.
But once you get past that, it's really, I use it 3-4 times a week. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, they're really great. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, Jack's really excited and he loves beef. So I think I just maybe need to go out of town and have him, you know, debut it and make something beef related and have his friends over to eat it or something. So.
Well, I mean, what's great about it also is that, you know, the planning thing. Like, it just gives you more options because if you didn't plan, like, it's, oh my God, it's 4 o'clock. What am I going to make for dinner? If you don't have an Instant Pot, what you can actually get on the table in that amount of time is pretty small. And so with an Instant Pot, you actually have a lot more choices because it's like, oh my God, you mean I can really actually make, you know, a pork roast and, you know, or like, say your husband wants to make brisket, like he can do it in under an hour. And that's just not an option if you're starting at 4, unless you have this pressurized cooking.
Yep. See, that's so funny because I, you know, so I have embraced a slow cooker or crock pot, whatever you want to call it. And I don't know, maybe those are two different things, but I consider them the same thing. But
no, they're the same thing.
Okay. So yesterday made these really good, pulled pork tacos, but that involves, putting the pork tenderloins into the thing at around, you know, like, I don't know, 1:30, 2 o'clock, and there's so many times that that's what I'm planning on making for dinner, and then suddenly it's 4:30. I'm like, it only works if you put the meat in it, you know?
Yeah, but okay, so that if you already use a slow cooker, just think of an Instant Pot as a slow cooker, except it gets the food on the table a day faster. So you take those same pork tenderloins, you put them in, and they'll be ready in 20 minutes instead of 4 hours.
See, I think I've
you don't do anything differently.
Oh, okay. Because I don't know. It just seems like getting it sealed and pressing the right buttons and that. No. It just seems kind of like the nuclear codes of food, you know?
So. Yeah, the first time you do it, it'll be like, oh my God, what am I doing? And then after you do it once, you'll be like, oh yeah, I've got this. Okay. It's really identical to the slow cooking process, except you have one more button to push.
Oh, yes. Okay. All right. It just seems so vacuum packed. I don't know, like there's frozen embryos in it or something. So,
I'm with a crock pot. Don't lift the lid.
Oh, yep.
Nothing good will come of that.
I've read enough to know that. So maybe I'll also start with reading Melissa's, the article that I saved on the NYT app.
Yes, I would start
app.
There.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. And then make your pork tenderloin tacos right in the Instant Pot. The only trick is add a lot less liquid.
Okay.
Not even a lot less, just a little less liquid.
Okay. All right.
If you email me, I'll help you convert. Okay.
and also the other thing is I am really, well, in hearing you talk about the homemade yogurt, I mean, that was what tipped the scales for me because I knew Jack wanted this Instant Pot. And I'm like, yeah, we don't need too much beef. And then I'm like, but I could make my own yogurt.
And you sure can.
I don't know, like there's just a hurdle to get over. So I don't know. Melissa, come out and run a half marathon in Portland, and then, you know, you can stop by and show me how to do this. So, but I guess that's what your videos are for, that I can bring you into my home without having you actually come visit. So,
yeah, exactly. Okay. Although I do love Portland. Portland is one of my favorite places. So.
Oh, good. Oh, good, good, good. And we have tons of great races. So once you get bit by the Brooklyn half bug, then, you know, you're because that's in your own backyard. So you really need to expand and go run in places you're not familiar with and places you can't bail on, you know, be like, oh, I'll just stop here at, you know, Cindy's house because I'm a little bit tired, you know. So
exactly.
Although I suspect your husband wouldn't let you do that, maybe. So there's a
no, not so much. You know, I was saying to him that he should start doing, you know, marathon tourism. It's like, let's just, you know, do marathons around the world. But he only does one a year. So but like half marathon tourism. Where are some good half marathons? And then we go to an interesting place and run a race.
Well, that's the whole reason why I did the Twin Cities Marathon, because I went there and I felt like I wanted to see more of the city, and particularly this one street, Summit Avenue. And I'm like, oh, it's so beautiful, the homes. Oh my gosh, I just want to stare at them all day. And, you know, my pal was like, well, you know, the marathon goes right up this. And I'm like, yeah, well, at my pace, that would be, you know, I'd get to really look at them and enjoy them. So, so there's something to that idea. So, well, great. Well, you have inspired me, Melissa. I will get out that Instant Pot. I will start making that yogurt and the pork and everything. So thank you so much. It was a delight to talk to you.
It was great to talk to you, too.
All right. Thanks. Well, Adrian, you are going to start that Woman Crush Wednesday column on the site. And I got, Melissa Clark, she is my new woman crush. That was fantastic. Oh, my gosh. I need a cheerleader like that to just push me out of my, but I'm not good at it. I don't know how to do it. And I do love her.
I think, yep. Yeah. You just got to start.
Yep. And I do love
her. It's
like
running, Sarah.
Yeah. That's good. I'm good at that. I can do that. yeah. So, and I told Melissa, she and I did a little test on Zencastr, which is how we record our podcast, as you know, Adrian, but, I didn't have time to make a shopping list before I went to Trader Joe's on Monday morning. And so I just brought her book with me and sat in the parking lot and made my shopping list. Yeah. So
great.
I'm trying a pasta dish of hers this evening. So I'm excited.
And that book is absolutely gorgeous. Oh my goodness.
So although I wanted pictures for every recipe.
Well,
you know, I got greedy.
In a perfect world. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I realize the quesadillas, they typically are a fairly pedestrian thing to make. This really elevates it to just so good. I mean, the whole family loved them. So, and really good leftovers too, which I love a good leftover.
I do too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoyed this show as much as we enjoyed recording it. And if so, we would love if you could please rate our podcast on iTunes and write a quick, hopefully glowing review. Given the way that iTunes works, when a podcast gets reviews, it helps other people find the podcast and helps podcasts find new listeners. So if you're not a write a review kind of gal, then how about you tell a few friends about our show? Maybe some gals in your running group, that young mother runner who just moved in down the street from you, or all your pals on Facebook. However you do it, please help us spread the word about the Another Mother Runner podcast. We really appreciate it. Our podcast is a member of the Acast Network, and our show today was produced in Portland, Oregon by Alex Ward from Sounds Like Pictures. Many happy miles and many happy meals.